Joining me right now is Martin Sherman. He's a strategist. It is a huge privilege to speak to him because he's the founder and CEO of the Israel Institute for Strategic Studies. He also served for 7 years in operational capacities in the Israeli Defense Establishment, and he was ministerial advisor to Yitzhak Shamir's government, and he joins us right now. Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
Thank you very much. Can we talk about what is happening in Israel at the moment? What are the big stories that are catching your attention right now?
Well, you know, I've lived in the country now for around about half a century, and I've never been more worried about the future than I am at the moment. Not because of external threats, but because of internal dissension. I think Israel is on the cusp of a civil war, and the kind of disloyalty displayed by the opponents of Netanyahu, and you're allowed to oppose Netanyahu, but basically the kind of resistance that now is being presented against Netanyahu is borderline treason, if not beyond that border, by some of the people who hold the most senior positions in Israeli government, whether that's former prime ministers, whether that's former generals, former defense ministers, former heads of intelligence services. It is completely scandalous. And what is worse, they're doing so with impunity.
Why?
In the past, people... Why?
Why are they not being held accountable?
I'm not a psychologist.
Yes.
But I think the enmity towards Netanyahu has pushed people to the brink of insanity, if not over that in some cases.
Gosh.
They've tried everything to get rid of him. They've tried beating with the polls. They've tried demonstrations. They've tried using the law as a weapon, and none of it's worked. And that, I think, is just driving them crazy. They cannot believe that Netanyahu has withstood all the attacks, and they're, in my opinion, they're willing to bring down the country rather than concede his continued incumbency.
I do. I agree with you. I think that I absolutely agree with you. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy, and very sad, you know, because in most fields of human endeavor, Israel has been on the cutting edge, whether it's science, technology, water usage, anything you can think of, Israel's been on the cutting edge of human endeavor. But when it comes to politics, it's a catastrophe. And as I say, I'm very, very pessimistic about the future. And I say not because I don't think that Israel has the ability to deal with external threats. I think it has. The problem is the kind of fissures that are opening up in Israeli society today are almost unbridgeable.
It takes our eye off the ball, right? We forget where our focus should be. I remember interviewing a rabbi who was organizing these protests. And I remember saying to him at the end of the interview, if I was Israel's enemy, I would be funding your protests. And I left it at that because he just didn't have anything to say.
That's true. I mean, it's entirely dystopian. You know, if you could go back and trace the protests against judicial reform, they were saying it was a threat to democracy. But that's reinventing language, because if you look at what the reform said, it was to move decisions from a narrow, unelected, unanswerable forum to an elected, broader, answerable forum, and somehow they managed to taint that with being undemocratic. I mean, that's complete a dystopian description of what's going on.
you know.
And if anything, I think if anything, the recent events prove that Israel needs judicial reform urgently, because you have the country today in the throes of a judicial tyranny. You have judges who have total authority and zero responsibility. They never pay the price for their decisions going wrong. I think when I spoke last time on your program, I mentioned the case of a woman called Tali Khatoua, who was driving home in the south with her children. She had four children and was pregnant with her fifth child. They passed some deserted buildings. Two Arab terrorists opened fire from the concealed from the building, drove them off the road, slaughtered the whole family from point blank range. Now, why this is so infuriating is that the army wanted to destroy the buildings, but the High Court said no. That was not a proportional response. So the whole family was murdered because of the High Court's meddling in security, in which they have no expertise, and no judge paid a price for that disastrous decision. In any other situation, someone who made such a catastrophic decision would pay a price, but in this case, no price was paid at all. And you can see the same thing happening in South Tel Aviv, where the High Court protected illegal immigrants from African countries who were making the legal residents of Tel Aviv's lives in those areas. It's a total hell.
Do you remember? I mean, it was talk. The world headlines is how racist Israel was, because Israel wanted to deport people who had come into Israel or had gone into Israel illegally. I remember that. Mm. I remember that very well. Martin, you know, if it wasn't Bibi to lead this war, who would it be?
I don't know. That's a very difficult question. Who Netanyahu's successor would be? Look, I'm not an uncritical apologist for Netanyahu, but he's certainly in a league of his own. He's probably, at least until Trump came on, and even to today, he's probably the leading statesman in the West today. So I don't know. People say, well, he hasn't nourished or fostered any successor. But who does that? I don't know any politician who grooms his successor.
That is odd. That's very odd. You know, even people who don't like him think that he's, that he is the only one who could do what he's doing right now. You know, one of our listeners.
Look, I had hopes for the former head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen. But when he was portrayed as a possible successor for Netanyahu, the press did a hatchet job on him, and he's basically been forced out of public life for all sorts of stories about extramarital affairs, etc., which I'm not sure that's relevant to his ability to govern. But the question of a successor for Netanyahu is a very serious one. I'm not sure that I have a indisputable candidate for him. I'm sure.
Just thinking, do you think that somebody like Yair Lapid would have been able to be a war president like Benjamin Netanyahu?
Yair Lapid is an indictment of the Israeli electorate. Yair Lapid is an indictment of the Israeli electorate. He is probably the most dangerous politician in the country. You know, he's good looking and glib, but he gives stupidity a bad name.
Yeah, sometimes good looks and brains don't always go together. I'm sorry to say.
No, he's very intelligent. He speaks with great confidence, but he has no knowledge about anything. And the fact that he got so. So much support in the election, I think, is a grave indictment of the Israeli electorate. Shows terrible judgment.
Marketing.
I'm a fierce opponent of someone like Yael Golan, who just came out with this terrible statement about Israel killing children as a hobby. But at least the man has achievements to his credit. Yael Lapid is nothing. He was a newscaster, nothing, and basically most of his jobs he got because of his father. His father was a very prominent media personality.
Martin, one of our listeners has come up with a comment. Thank you so much. His name is Faisal. And he says, Kathy, you and your guest know that Netanyahu did this in bold. So he's serious. He's shouting at us. He's saying Netanyahu has violated all laws, even Torah. So they must stop him. He's creating and spreading war to hold power. What's your thought on that, Martin?
I cannot understand the logical basis of it. He hasn't violated any laws. The case against him is totally trumped up charges. It wasn't a coincidence that a whole gallery of prominent lawyers in the U.S. call on the Attorney General to dismiss the indictment and to cancel the indictment. People following the trial can see the whole thing falling apart. I mean, I'm not sure that in the end the truth will have a major role to play in the verdict. But if you look at it today, the judges, after only hearing the prosecution witness, called on the prosecution to drop the corruption charge because they hadn't made their case. The whole thing is a tissue of fabrication, and if anything, that is going to be one of the greatest factors in destroying public trust in the judicial system. The legal system here is completely out of control. As I said, it's total authority, zero responsibility, total abuse. I mean, you know, if you look at the laws in Israel, the basic law, which is, you know, sort of supposed to have constitutional stature, basic law on Knesset, clause 7A. Says that any party or candidate who does not accept Israel as a Jewish and democratic state cannot participate in the election. Now, none of the Arab parties and none of the Arab candidates in those parties fit their prescription. In other words, they should be barred. That doesn't mean the Arabs should be barred from election. The Arabs can vote, but those parties should be banned from participation. And even when the Knesset election committee banned them, the High Court overturns that, reinventing the law. It's a totally, as I said, totally dystopian situation. Yeah. I would like your listeners to check. If you go in and check Basic Law Knesset, Clause 7A, you'll see that any party or any candidate who does not recognize Israel as a nation state of the Jewish people, a democratic nation state of the Jewish people, cannot participate in the election. And the High Court, time and time and time again, allows them to participate.
Yeah,
Faisal makes up the laws as it goes.
Yeah,
it's acting as a super legislative body instead of rather interpreting laws. It's creating its own laws. You know, the same thing now with the verdict on the dismissal of the security. They said there was no factual basis for his dismissal. Really? Yeah, what happened on the 7th of October? That's not enough to dismiss him.